Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Triple Click Home.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to our eighth episode of Triple Click Home. I am Alina Roberts, and I'm happily joined today by Mr. Buddy Brannon.
Hello, I'm happily here.
Mr. Peter Bosley.
I'm here. Happily is subjective.
And we have a special guest with us today. His name is John Panarese, and we invited him to join us. He runs a company called Mac for the Blind, and he's going to tell you a little bit about that. But we invited him to talk about what happened at WWDC and get his input.
My company, is Mac for the Blind. And I do a couple of things. It's a resource website for blind Mac and iDevice users who want material for tips and tricks and how-to. And I also do training and support for the Mac and iDevices.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for joining us.
I got to say that John's been around the block quite a while in the AT field, and he's been a Mac fan before, like, being a Mac fan was cool. So
this is true.
I remember, John, we started chatting a long time ago, back around when OS X came out and Outspoken went away, and you were lamenting the fact that the Mac was no longer accessible anymore, and we're looking forward to when that would be again. So I for one am glad to have you here and in our community here.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it's been a nice turn of events since Tiger.
So last Monday was the exciting Worldwide Development Conference hosted by Apple. And during the conference, we were introduced to quite a few new things. I want to pat myself on the back because I basically announced what we would receive on our last podcast, which is the
nice.
New MacBook Pros, new operating system, and a new iOS operating system that's coming in the fall. So no announcement of the iPhone.
I want to basically say that my ability of tech prognostication, my track record is unblemished, and I totally blew it again.
Good job, buddy.
See, I don't even remember awesome. What you said. What did you say?
Let's see. I said that I didn't believe there would be Facebook integration, for one thing.
You got that wrong.
Oh yeah, I got that so wrong. There were a couple of other things I don't remember now, but I think I said that we would probably
Get a Retina display. Wait, did you
yeah,
say
we,
that?
Yeah, we wouldn't get a Retina display, and I said that we would get Mountain Lion early, and three for three, man.
So to all of our listeners, if you want a reading from Buddy on what your future looks like, probably not the best person to go to.
Not so much. And if you want to know what's not going to happen in the tech world in the future, go ahead and ask me. And then whatever I tell you, you can count on that not happening.
So let's start with a talk about the Mac itself and Mountain Lion. We will be getting Mountain Lion sometime soon.
July 18th is actually the rumor that I just read somewhere. I don't know. It was a Mac Daily Mac.
John has a rumor for
yeah,
us.
It's, I think right, it's Mac Daily News or something like that said Thursday, July 18th.
Well, they're pretty reliable, actually.
All right, so we're going to bank on the rumor of July 18th.
I'm not putting an opinion in on this one. I'll just...
It's been in the hands of developers for quite a few months now. And I've heard on Twitter some good things about Mountain Lion, but I think we could just highlight a few things that we are going to get in the new version. It is important to note that if your Mac is of a certain age and not an Intel-based processor, Mountain Lion is not in your future.
Even some Intel-based processors, Mountain Lion is not in your future.
Right. Right. And we do have a link in our show notes that does tell you how to prepare for Mountain Lion and to make sure that you have a computer that can be upgraded.
And it's at an infomercial price, by the way.
It is. It's only $19. It's so exciting.
Remember, guys, Apple doesn't make money on software. That's not they charge people for software to keep them honest. Apple's making their money on their hardware, which,
right,
as we'll see shortly, is very expensive at some points.
So I'm going to say that my excitement about Mountain Lion is all about dictation. This was one thing that they hadn't announced when they first came out with the announcement about Mountain Lion, but the rumor is no longer a rumor. We are going to have in Mountain Lion. So take your dictation button on your iPhone and put it on your Mac. And I'm a pretty fast typist, so I'm not sure how often I'll use this, but I'm guessing that there will be times when maybe my hands are bothering me or I just don't feel like typing and I can use a dictation feature, and that's going to be pretty awesome. And I think it's going to be very awesome for a lot of users with dexterity problems. And I know a lot of authors really like to dictate their work. So this is going to be exciting. So, Buddy, what are you most excited about in Mountain Lion?
Well, really, I don't see Mountain Lion as hugely revolutionary with lots of just new gee whiz gotta have functions.
No, it's really not.
Yeah, it really isn't. And I did want to say, though, that if you're looking for a lot of new voiceover features, you're not going to find a lot of new voiceover features. I think the thing said they might have improved cut and paste and a couple of other small improvements, but not a whole lot new for the voiceover guys, I don't think.
So there's nothing you're excited about?
Not especially, no. It's like I say, it's an incremental sort of...
More in the same line.
It's an evolutionary upgrade, yeah. Nothing revolutionary.
All right. So, John, you're a Mac guy. Give us a fanboy reaction.
Well, I think they're saying 200 new features, but they said that about Lion.
They say that every version.
They say that every time.
Yeah. I mean, the one that really catches my attention, and simply because I have two Macs and an iPad, an iPhone, is better iCloud integration, particularly with documents. And
I forgot about that.
And I'm curious to see, because
when
I'm often working on documents on different devices simultaneously, so this is one area that I'm really curious to see how it's going to work in the real world. By the way, there is some stuff about VoiceOver on the Apple website about what additions there are, and there were more than a couple. I mean, I don't know how significant they're going to end up being, but there was some stuff listed there. And of course, I don't have it in front of me at the moment, so I can't even say.
I don't either. There were a couple of things, but there was nothing that really reached out and grabbed me.
Yeah, nothing super.
So, Peter, what is your perspective on Mountain Lion? Do you have a Mac that you're going to upgrade? Do you think there's anything that people are going to be excited about, or is this just another kind of sort of upgrade?
Well, I'll upgrade everything just because I got to stay current software version-wise, which is security content. But I'm not really a day-to-day Mac user, you know, use it for a whole lot. Really, the vast majority of the stuff I do on there is, hey, my iTunes library lives on here, and I'll mess around with doing other stuff while I'm in iTunes or doing something like that. But, you know, I don't sit on the Mac operating system all day long because I work in a Windows environment. So for me, there's not a whole lot. The iCloud stuff doesn't make a big difference to me. I do all my word processing on Windows. So really, the only thing I see myself using is possibly the dictation, depending on how good it is at sending emails and such.
Okay. So we do have a link to all of the new features that you can expect, and come July, we'll probably have a better take on the operating system once we actually have it installed on our systems. So along the Mac lines, there were some announcements about new Macs at WWDC. There will be a new 11-inch and 13-inch MacBook Airs. They're having their hardware upgraded. There also is going to be a new 15-inch MacBook Pro that has some pretty good specs on it. But the winner of the day at WWDC was what they're calling the Mac Pro Retina display, or Mac Pro Retina.
I love how they did this in the keynote, though. They did these boring old MacBook Air, MacBook Pro updates. Everyone's going, Ivy Bridge, blah, blah. There's nothing big here. And then they bust out with the Retina display. It was pretty cool the way they did that.
It was a good overall.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. And I listened to the Twit guys during WWDC.
Yeah, me too.
And it was interesting to listen to their reactions. And I loved the bet on how much this was going to cost. And I'll tell you what, when I finished listening to those specs, $3,000 minimum was in my head. Because this is something that doesn't exist on other computers. And they've got some pretty amazing specs for a professional. And so knowing Apple, I thought there's no way this is under $3,000. And they came out with $21.99. And that is a lot of money. That's way more than I'm going to spend for sure. Because this is not a computer for people like me. This is not a computer for a regular consumer. This is designed with a professional videographer, photographer, graphic artist, somebody who needs that kind of power, somebody who needs a Retina display to show how beautiful and amazing their images are.
Doesn't stop any of the rest of us from drooling over it.
Right.
That $21.99 price is actually less than I paid to customize my MacBook Pro that I bought last spring.
Wow. Okay.
So, you know,
and let it be known that $21.99 is the base model of their 15-inch Retina display MacBook.
You could spend upwards of $3,500 for one, right, if you so desire.
Yeah, if you buy the SSD RAM.
Yeah, if you got the 16 gigs of RAM and the 750 gig storage and the Core i7.
Right. You could spend over $3,000, but if you are a professional in a field that warrants this kind of computer, because I'm not going to tell anybody not to buy it, but I will say that you don't need it if you don't require the level.
Oh, I need it.
Okay, Peter likes spending money on toys.
I really. It's funny because I'm of two minds here, and we've got several articles about the 15-inch Retina MacBook Pro with Retina display. We have several articles about it, and I'm of two minds, really. On the one hand, I really want one because it's cool. I mean, I don't really like that they got rid of the Ethernet port. I guess I can live with it that they've got two Thunderbolt ports and they've got a Thunderbolt to Ethernet adapter. That would be okay because, I mean, like, you're not going to compromise speed there so much. It's just an extra thing to carry around. But one of the articles that we're linking to really makes a strong case for why this isn't such a good idea. And it has some compelling points, in my opinion. It's not upgradable. It's not changeable in any way because everything's soldered in, battery's soldered in, the memory's soldered in, the screen is, you can't, they say it's made out of recyclable materials, except that the glass is bonded to the aluminum and you can't really recycle it that way and that sort of thing. But I still want one.
Of course you still want one. And it is something to consider. Mac used to kind of pride themselves on having systems that were changeable. I have a brand new hard drive in my 2009 MacBook. I also have 4 gigs of memory. It didn't come with 4 gigs of memory. I put those in there myself. And that's turned my 3-year-old computer into a much better machine. And I think this is another question where you have to ask yourself, am I willing to put out the money on a 1 to 2 year basis because I can't upgrade my machine?
And really, the article kind of says Apple's giving us a choice and asking the consumer where we want to steer the boat.
Yep.
Do we want thin and light and all the compromises that entails, or do we want the upgradability and the expandability and the sort of hackability?
The modular nature of this new machine is kind of annoying to me. I'm used to being able to upgrade my own RAM if I want to. So I would say that if you're going to buy one of those, buy higher so that you don't regret it in a year or so when you need more RAM or more hard drive space. Otherwise, stick with the other models. The other one's got some decent upgrades, and there's no reason not to maybe investigate one of those. You can still get a solid-state drive.
Well, that's what I'm doing, actually. That's what I'm doing. I'm going to get
in the regular upgrades that isn't this Retina display, which obviously us blind people don't really care that much about.
Right.
the solid state drive is going to be your best upgrade, in my opinion, because it's going to give you the biggest speed boost.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you want a solid state drive, you can get that in your MacBook Airs. So,
yeah, but you can't get a lot of other things in the MacBook Airs. Like, it can only go up to 4 gig of RAM, can't it?
Yeah, 4
gig. Or can it go up to 8? Yeah, 4, I think.
I think it's only 4.
No, it can go, the Air can go to 8
yeah.
now.
Oh, can it?
Go
yeah, to 8 okay. now?
So, John, do you have any other thoughts on them moving towards this unfixability? You did mention that you do work on Macs.
Well, I think it's one of these things that Apple is really testing, and what was said before. I think that they're going to see how this plays out as far as whether this is going to be an item people are going to purchase or whether they're still going to stay with the, you know, the classic, I guess you call it, quote-unquote, MacBook Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're going to buy the new 15 with the Retina display, I mean, I think your best bet is buying high, unfortunately. But if it's not upgradable, then you might as well just get a high-end one and just sit with it for 2-3 years.
Right.
Yep.
That's, to me, the best bet. I mean, I like the idea, you know, of having a system that you can upgrade the RAM and you can upgrade the hard drive. So I'm not interested personally in the new one.
Yeah,
I'm trying to talk myself out of this refresh because I kind of have a self-imposed rule about computers that I got to keep it for 2 years. So we'll see if I stick to my guns on this one.
Well, it probably would end up that I would not get one simply because philosophically I like to be able to upgrade my stuff if I want to. But also, again, I want the Ethernet port. Darn it!
But he's hell-bent on that Ethernet port.
I'm hell-bent on the Ethernet port. The CD-ROM or the DVD drive, take it or leave it. But playing with DDWRT on my router sort of requires that I have at least one machine that has an Ethernet port. And well, I have one, but I would like to be able to do that.
We also have an article that says there is a rumor that we can expect a 13-inch Retina display MacBook Pro. Obviously, that's a rumor, so you guys can read about it. It's probably going to have similar specs, but it's not going to be as high-end as the 15. Also, the 17-inch MacBook Pro, if for some reason you never bought one and you wanted one now, I'm very sorry to tell you that it's gone.
It is gone, yes.
They have discontinued it, and they, of course, have discontinued it because it wasn't selling well.
By the way, I'm going to see if I can keep my record of bad prognostication and say that I think that the 13-inch MacBook Pro with Retina display is going to be starting at $300 less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that
sounds
reasonable.
That's what I was thinking. $1,899 is what I'm guessing.
Yep.
So before we move on, we're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors and learn about DocuScan Plus. And I have to say that I recently acquired DocuScan Plus for the Mac, and I am extremely happy and really am enjoying having a reliable OCR program again on my Mac.
Looking for a cross-platform solution to quickly convert printed materials and PDFs into text, MP3, or DAISY formats? Check out Cerotech's DocuScan Plus. For just $299, use DocuScan Plus on your Windows or Mac computer. Store documents in the cloud for easy retrieval and access them from anywhere. For more information, visit www.docuscanplus.com.
We're back, and we're going to talk to you guys now about iOS 6. I have to say that keynotes at WWDC are really, really long, and I had
this
to
one be was at, especially long.
Yeah.
Yes. And I had to be in an appointment before they started talking about iOS 6. So that was very frustrating for me. Thankfully, though, they did come out later that day with the keynote in its entirety and also a link to the website that details most of what they talked about. So before we talk about the features, I want to say hands off to Apple, because in their video, the first thing that's featured is a blind man who's using Ariadne GPS and talking about being able to independently go hiking in unfamiliar territory. And that was really awesome. And I really applaud that they're showing off how accessible their items are. And I like Ariadne. I use it pretty frequently as a backup to Navigon. So yay for Apple for showing off how cool their devices are and user-friendly to us.
Yeah, definitely. Highlighting a blind person as the first person in that video was really cool. It was just,
yeah.
I wasn't expecting that, to be honest with you.
Well, and not only was it cool, but it was a blind guy doing something cool.
Right.
Yeah,
it absolutely. It wasn't one of these sappy, icky, usual, stereotypical things.
Am I the only one that finds Ariadne to be kind of half-baked?
Well, it has its purposes. It really is not.
It's not a full-blown GPS
application,
yeah,
that you could use on its own.
No, you definitely can't use it on its own.
Yeah, you got to use it in conjunction.
But doesn't it use the OpenStreetMap or something?
Yeah.
So clearly its points of interest are somewhat lacking. But that said, it, in conjunction with other things, it does some neat stuff.
Yeah.
Although I got to say, I'm really intrigued to see what Apple's going to do with the new maps.
Yeah, that definitely has got me very curious.
Yeah, so speaking of maps, we do have a link to all of the new features that are going to be coming out in iOS 6. It has been released to developers, and so they're going to spend the next few months picking out all the bugs and recommending things to Apple and
breaking stuff.
Yep. And hopefully by this fall, we will see it. And Maps is one of the exciting new features, and it is integrated with VoiceOver. They were very specific to actually mention that. So you can kiss Google Maps goodbye, because their map application is no longer going to be using Google Maps. They have purchased multiple mapping companies over the last few years and have decided to come out with their own map-based turn-by-turn GPS solution.
We have an article here that says that they're using TomTom.
Yeah, that's
yes. Right. Which should be interesting, because I've heard mixed reviews. I use Navigon, which is Garmin-based. TomTom is a different mapping system.
I forget. One of them uses NavTech, and one of them uses the other one whose name I can't think of.
Right. And like I said, it's going to be integrated with VoiceOver, which will be very exciting. I did mention, however, on Twitter, because there were a couple people that were saying, well, you can say goodbye to all those GPS applications that people have been buying, because integrated into your phone. But let us all remember that this is going to be data heavy.
Yes.
And you can use turn-by-turn GPS on your phone and be excited about it. And then when Verizon or AT&T reminds you that your data cap is approaching, you'll go,
Or if you go into roaming or out of area or lose cell coverage, boy, howdy, you're out of luck then.
That's right. And so I don't think things like Navigon are going to go away, and I don't think people are going to abandon them completely, because it's map-based, and that means that I can use it wherever I am, regardless of my cellular connection, and that's pretty huge. So, yay, Apple. I'm excited. I hope that it ends up being a really good app. But we'll see. There are some naysayers that are like, how are they going to do what Google does? There's no way.
If I was an app developer that made a GPS application, I'd be kind of upset right now. I think you've got some valid points that the other players aren't going to be totally left out in the cold. But in a large part, they will be, because what you'll find is that people use what's well integrated into the OS.
Right.
So
yep.
If they can tell Siri, hey, navigate to here, and Siri gives them directions, they're not going to care that it's data heavy.
Well, I'm going to care. And some people like me who don't want to pay AT&T any more money than I already do probably would care.
They'll care when the data cap starts a-coming.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like me. Yeah.
Another exciting thing that we're going to see, and I guess I'll just talk about my favorite thing, which is the Do Not Disturb feature. And I think this is Peter's favorite
as well.
Absolutely.
So I honestly leave my phone downstairs away from my bedroom, because if I don't, I have to mute it and turn off the speech on VoiceOver, because I have a lot of Twitter followers that are in other parts of the world, and they mention me at random times in the middle of the night.
Well, it's especially fun when you have it plugged into, like I keep mine plugged into the Bose sound dock.
Yeah.
Or the speaker, you know, the docking speaker.
Yeah.
And sometimes the volume is not where I think the volume is.
Uh-huh.
And it's quite loud and wakes me up and wakes Melanie up, and Melanie gets a little upset.
Yeah, I'll bet.
This has got some really good use, though. I mean, you have to realize some of us are on call 24 hours a day. We can get calls any time of the day or night, and so turning our phones off isn't an option for us.
Right.
So, you know, we can have more than one phone, which I've done in the past and disliked immensely, or we can have the option to do something like this where you can set your phone on Do Not Disturb from this time to this time, but still define a group of callers that can still reach you if they need to.
Yep.
So I'm very happy about this. And yes, it's my absolute favoriteest feature. I think I made some snarky quip on Twitter about it at the time as well.
Well, and my husband made a good point to me, which was that I might set mine for my clients to only be calling me during the week. Since some of them apparently think that I am on call 24 hours a day, and they'll call me on Sunday morning, and I get very upset and don't answer the phone. But that's a really, really nice feature that honestly I think should have come out a long time ago.
But I just got to know, do you get the calls where they say, you know, I really hate to call you right now on because I know it's the weekend and yes. I really hate to disturb you, but...
Yes.
Like I say, I'm excited about the Maps thing. The Maps thing is cool. Facebook integration, if they do it right, it might actually make me use Facebook, maybe, right. Because like I hate Facebook, and it, you know, some people swear by Facebook. I swear at Facebook.
Yes.
The Maps really is a big deal. And I don't know, the Passbook, not such a big deal.
I'm curious to see how it's going to work.
I'll be interested to see how it expands and how they end up using it. But right now, being just store loyalty cards and coupons and things like that, I'm not so interested right now.
Like I said, it's going to be interesting because it's one of these applications that can be expanded upon, and you never know where it's going to lead to. But I agree with you. As it stands at the moment, it doesn't really do anything for me as far as piquing my curiosity. I mean, I'm really going to be curious to see what Siri is going to be like.
Is it going to do more stuff? I mean, because they were making a big deal about how Siri knows baseball and football now. Ooh, couldn't care about that. But
to be fair, we do have a lot of blind...
We do have a lot of blind sports fans. Sports I don't fans. Happen to be one of them.
Well, I happen to be one of them, so I thought that was one that was pretty cool. But I'm interested
in... Siri knows about movies now, too, which is nice.
Yeah, movies, and I think it's going to be great that you can launch applications using Siri. I mean, that
yes,
was...
Yes, finally...
I'll be looking forward to trying that. I must have missed that part.
So, buddy, I appreciate your lack of excitement about Passbook. Could you tell our listeners who weren't listening to WWDC what that actually is?
Passbook, as I understand it, it's something like what other people might call wallet.
You know, like Google Wallet or whatever.
Yeah, except it doesn't yet, I don't think, store like credit cards or things like that.
Yeah, that's the one thing it's missing.
It's missing credit cards, which might actually be useful, but of course, it better be pretty darn secure. You don't want your phone to get stolen and thus your whole identity. But I guess they're testing the waters with it because right now it stores things like store loyalty cards, tickets, coupons, things of that nature, all in your phone so you don't have to carry around little pieces of paper to lose.
Another thing that we linked to in our show notes is that there is a feature that they didn't really highlight in WWDC, but it is mentioned in their whole 200 lists of features because we like that number. Apple really likes 200.
200's the magic word.
There are 200 new features in iOS 6.
It's a new version, so it's got to have 200 things.
Right. And that is privacy controls for your contacts list. So if you guys will remember a while back when we talked to you guys about apps getting in trouble for accessing your contact list on your phone without your permission or without your explicit permission, apparently it was in their, you know, privacy rules that nobody reads. And so now what they've introduced is a way for you to directly make that choice. So if an app is going to have access to your contact list, you have to give them explicit permission and there won't be any wishy-washiness about it. So that probably gets them out of trouble with all of us and gets them out of trouble with other things like the federal government. That would be my guess.
It's kind of timely. considering that that's been such a big issue in the news in a lot of different areas about privacy issues,
right,
and what kind of data is being collected and how it's being used. So it doesn't really surprise me that Apple's finally doing this, because they've gotten a lot of pressure over the last probably year or so that I can remember.
Peter or Buddy, do you guys have anything to add about that?
It's about time.
Yeah, what he said.
What he said. Another feature that they mention kind of really briefly on the list of new features, but it's something that our community should be really excited about, and that I know of at least a handful of people that this applies directly to, because VoiceOver is finally going to be integrated with Zoom. So,
woo-hoo!
Since VoiceOver was introduced onto the iPhone, you could have VoiceOver or you could have magnification. You could not have both. And I have a lot of clients myself, and I know a lot of low vision users who want both because they need both. Sometimes they want the ability to be able to read what's on the screen, and they don't want to have to use a CCTV or a handheld magnifier. And sometimes they want VoiceOver because they can't read fast enough, and maybe they're reading an article, or maybe they're reading emails, or whatever the case may be. And right now we exist in a world where those are two different entities. And I've had myself been asked, when is this going to get fixed? Is it never going to get fixed? You know, because it's kind of like saying to those with low vision, yeah, we realize that you can't see the screen unless it's really, really large. So we're going to let you have magnification, but you don't really need a screen reader, right? That's for those who can't see the screen.
Wow.
So maybe they finally get it, because it's going to finally be integrated. And I think that's pretty awesome. Again, it's a demonstration of their commitment to making it as user-friendly as possible. So there's also another feature listed under accessibility, which is called Guided Touch. And this is going to be something that allows adults primarily to cut off other parts of the device to children. So whether this be for a child with autism who needs to be redirected and kept on task, or a child with ADHD, they also mentioned that it could be used in a testing situation, so that if a kid's testing on an iPad, the teacher knows that they can't go anywhere else besides where they're at.
Which is interesting, because when they were showing this feature, I was like, well, how do you get out of it if you have, or when you want to convert it back to a regular device?
I think you just turn Guided Touch off.
I got to say that the whole deal with Zoom and VoiceOver, I'll be interested to see how Melanie does with that, because she, I think she could use both, but she finds it kind of annoying to have just one or the other. And so she sometimes just does without, then has trouble with things. So I'll be interested to see how she does with that with her iPad.
If you can't exit the application, how are you going to turn Guided Touch off?
I thought there was a way of doing it, and I'd have to actually go back and listen to the keynote, but I thought they mentioned something, and if I'm wrong, I stand corrected, but I'm pretty sure it was mentioned. Or
there's got to be a way to get, I mean, there has to be a way.
Article. I just know that there was a way of doing it.
Yeah, I'm sure that
something
there is
about
some
drawing
way.
A circle around apps. Maybe that was to turn it on for those apps and draw a circle around them. I remember a circle from somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. I do too. I don't remember exactly, but you're right. I do vaguely recall that.
So do you guys have any other things before I talk about what could be a potentially controversial thing for those of us in our community who have some favorite applications in a certain genre that we mentioned in our show notes? Is there any other features that you guys want to highlight?
Well, I just wanted to say about the Zoom and VoiceOver feature that it is long overdue, because I recently did a show with a lot of older folks who were losing their sight to macular degeneration and such. And when they heard that you can't use VoiceOver and Zoom at the same time on the phone, they were kind of discouraged about it. So I was kind of excited to hear about that. And I have two clients that really would have benefited if it was tomorrow, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. The need is definitely there. It really is about time that we acknowledge that. So I encourage everybody to visit Apple's official website that tells you everything that you have to look forward to in iOS 6. There's a lot there. They talk about things in Mail and changes to Safari and other apps that are built in. And so our last story in our show notes that talks about iOS is a possible podcast application. So right now you can access your podcasts by downloading them from iTunes and then syncing them and blah, blah, blah. Or you can do what a lot of people do and get a third-party application for podcasts and use that to get them more quickly and without fuss. And I thought that when we upgraded to iOS 5 and we're doing the wireless sync, that that fuss with podcasts would go away. Maybe I don't have it turned on correctly because I still have to fuss with it. And I don't have an external application, but I know a lot of people like Downcast. There's another couple of apps that I've heard about. What do you guys think on this? Do you think that them having their own podcast-specific application would solve the problem? Would it make third-party apps irrelevant?
The challenge is always going to be for the third-party apps to figure out a way to do things better than what's built in.
Right.
That's always the challenge. Whether the iOS 6 one that's going to come with it or be available for it is going to do what everybody wants or not, I guess remains to be seen. But I'm sure there will be a certain contingent of folks that will just continue to use Downcast because they use Downcast now. Mm-hmm. But the challenge for folks like the guys that did Downcast is going to be, or people who do podcast specific applications like the macOS Ken app or the Today in iPhone app or the Starship Sofa app or whatever. Yes, there is an app for Starship Sofa. The challenge is going to be to make their specific app compelling enough and do something in a way that people find better than what the built-in one does.
Indeed. And, you know, just as an example, Twitter is integrated into the iPhone, and I do use the Twitter app that's built in, or rather that you have to download, but it's from Twitter. I also still use Tweetless Pro to actually read my news feed. So, you know, it didn't make it irrelevant for me because the Twitter app from Twitter is still not what I want it to be. So, like you said, it's all about being better than whatever is built into the phone. So let's move on to some general tech stuff that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with WWDC or what we learned about. We're going to start with the death of Ping.
Woo!
Woo! Yay! Yay! Bye-bye, Ping. I never used you. I turned you off when I had the option to turn you off because you were annoying and made iTunes slower than it already was. And
also useless.
Yeah.
it was useless. So Apple, good job. Good job at trying to come out with a social network. You failed. You're finally admitting that you failed. And good riddance. Unless Peter or John actually liked Ping, and then I might have to laugh at both of you.
Never touched it.
It was a big yawn.
Yeah, never made a difference to me. So it's there, it's not. Whatever.
If there were any Ping lovers out there, I'm very sorry. Your social network died.
We're for both of the people who used Ping, sorry. Yes.
For all the Verizon users, they are coming out with shared data plans. So I'm not a Verizon user, so I'm going to hand this reaction over to Peter and or John. I don't know if John's a Verizon user.
No, I'm AT&T.
All right, Peter, it's all you.
Well, Verizon announced that they're, as part of their elimination of the unlimited data plan, they're basically restructuring their plans around data being the commodity, which of course we know is true.
Yes.
So what they're saying now is for a fixed monthly price, they're going to give you unlimited text and unlimited voice, and you're just going to be paying for your data plan. And it makes it really kind of expensive for people that have one or two devices.
Yes, it does.
If you're, you know, if I was married, I'd be angry because I would have, you know, two smartphone bills and the data plan. But where it really comes into play is if you've got a lot of devices, you could end up doing okay. But for those of us that don't have a lot of devices or those of us who don't want to have to worry about a limited data plan, it's really kind of annoying. So the pricing structure is $40 for the base fee for a smartphone, $10 for a tablet or a hotspot. And I don't know what they're charging for feature phones, and I don't remember the exact plan structure, but I think it's $50 for 1 gig, 60 for 2 gigs.
Holy crap!
I can't remember.
So
from there,
Peter, is this going to be optional?
This isn't going to be optional. This is going to be how their plans are structured from this point forward.
Oh my gosh!
Oh, that just that.
Okay,
that
well,
sucks
Verizon,
beyond
if
words.
You ever thought I was going to switch to you, not now.
I mean, that does. Well, it sucks beyond words. That's just amazing.
If you had a smartphone and a couple of tablets and you wanted, you know, 10 gigs of data, I think it's $100 for 10 gigs of data, you could probably do okay. But the thing is that with 4G, you can go through these data plans like so quickly. So I don't think that the pricing structure is sustainable long term, at least on a consumer basis. I think we'll end up having to do other things. We'll see how it plays out, I guess.
Ow.
I'm annoyed, though.
Well, thank you, Verizon, for proving
again
that you're
yes.
evil. Buddy, why don't you tell us about this last story in our show notes? I'm assuming you're excited about it because you put it in there.
Well, it's interesting.
Okay.
Okay, so Square, for those of you who do not know and are just tuning in, Square is a company that has basically given anybody who wants it the ability to process credit cards. This means that anybody can go to Square, sign up for an account, and they'll send you a little thing for free that will then allow you to take credit card payments. Like if you are a musician and you're selling a CD, you can take credit card payment. If you're a taxi driver, you can take credit card. In fact, I just ran into a fella last weekend who was selling sort of natural remedy teas, and he used Square. And it was really kind of cool. You just swipe your credit card through this thing on your iPhone or your tablet or your whatever, and it processes the credit card. And actually, the transaction rates are actually quite reasonable. Naturally, it's not for big ticket items mostly, and there are some limitations and so forth. But they're pretty reasonable, and for most people, they're not going to find a problem with it.
I was going to say, you're charging more than $10,000 a month? What are you selling?
No, well, clearly I'm not, but I'm just saying that...
Do you have a little greenhouse behind your house or something?
No. No, and in fact, I say most people aren't going to run into this, and I think there's a per transaction limit too, which I can't remember what it was or what it is.
Again, it's something ridiculous.
Yeah, it used to be, I think when it first started, it was quite a bit lower than it is now. Anyway, the point is that anybody can get this, and that means that it's really changed a lot what it means to take credit cards. Because before Square, you know, you had to get, if you wanted to take credit cards, if you're a small business or if you're an individual or if whatever, you had to get a merchant account from usually through a bank, and that involved either equipment or a virtual terminal. It involved a monthly fee, and that on top of the per transaction and percentages that they charge, you had to pay that regardless of any business you did, which made the prospect of taking credit cards for really small-time businesses and so forth pretty difficult proposition to swallow. Now, PayPal helped, but of course, with PayPal, you couldn't really do face-to-face transactions very easily with PayPal. So Square sort of filled that space, and it's pretty exciting because the story that we have referenced in the show notes, now that you know what Square is, says that Square has 2 million active accounts. And that's huge. That even if a lot of them don't do anything, the fact is that they can. And if you want to, for example, split a bill, or if somebody owes you money, you can take it on their credit card, whatever. It's just like that. It's cool. It's an interesting thing, and it's an interesting shift in how this stuff is handled. Unfortunately, because the Square reader plugs into the headphone jack of your iPhone, it makes using it with VoiceOver pretty near impossible unless you're using a Bluetooth Braille display that's supported by... Yeah, so you can get some functionality with the Braille display, I think, but audio, forget it.
If you plug the Square reader into your phone and then connect a Bluetooth headset after you do that, it works.
Oh, will that work?
Oh, that good to know. Thanks, Peter.
Oh, because I thought that somebody had said that wouldn't work. So you have to connect the Bluetooth headphones after you plug the Square reader in.
Yes, because if you plug the Square reader in after the Bluetooth, then it switches to the...
Got it. Oh, nice. Fantastic. That might actually motivate me to buy a Bluetooth headset.
But yes, it does work, and you can do it.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's great news. Thanks,
well,
Pete.
The future of paying for stuff is upon us.
Buddy says, hey, get the greenhouse up and running now.
Yeah, right. So we're going to take another short break, and then we'll be back with your iReports and emails. Please remember that you can always get in contact with us via the iReport or resources at serotalk.com. You can also send us a tweet at twitter.com/tripleclickhome.
As a young teenage boy, I didn't even know what autism was. How do you even spell that? A few years later, I heard that a friend's cousin's son had been diagnosed with autism.
I still wasn't sure what that really meant.
When I went to college, my roommate's brother had autism. When I moved to the city for work, my best friend called me and told me his son had been diagnosed with autism. We were both in shock. I still remember the day I walked into the house and saw that look on my wife's face. I knew something was wrong. I'll never forget how I felt when she said, "Our son has autism."
Autism is getting closer to home. Today, 1 in 110 children is diagnosed with autism. That's a 600% increase in the last 20 years. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everybody. Again, I want to thank all those who have sent us feedback via iReports and emails. I wanted to address an email that we got from Nolan Jenikoff. He has asked how we turn off sound that we're getting probably extra sounds when we're using VoiceOver. So if, Nolan, if you're speaking about speech, like if you use a Braille display and you didn't want VoiceOver talking while you're using that Braille display, you could do a 3-finger double tap. That is your speech toggle on and off.
Now, if you're talking about the sounds that it makes when you move between items or when you switch pages or things of that nature, the only way to turn that off is with the mute switch. If you flip the mute switch, then you won't hear any of that.
Right.
If you don't want to hear the key clicks as you type, there is a setting for that in the, where is it?
It's under sound.
I'm trying to remember. It's in
on settings.
Yeah, it's settings.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Settings under sounds. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes.
So if you turn keyboard clicks off, then you won't hear that. There isn't another way that I'm aware of anyway to turn off sounds other than that.
Right. So hope that answers your question. And again, we encourage all of you to send us your feedback via iReports, emails to resources at serotalk.com, or mentioning us on Twitter at twitter.com/tripleclickhome.
Or you can call the blab line at 866-997-2522.
All right, so let's move on to some apps. I'm going to let everybody know that the show notes says that there is a call for beta testers. They are full, but
there is a new
application that's being developed right now that's called Flexi. It was highlighted at a meeting with the guys at Sendero during CSUN. And Flexi is an application that lets you type on the screen without an actual keyboard. And based on where you put your thumbs or your fingers, it determines what you're typing.
I'm kind of curious how that works.
I don't actually understand how it works. Peter, do you understand how it works?
No.
No, neither do I.
I unfortunately missed the window for the beta, so I can't tell you how it works.
Yeah, so did I. I can say that Miss Lisa Salinger has reported that she's been very happy as a beta tester. She finds it to be extremely accurate, considering the magic of it all. And obviously, it does make errors, but it has increased her typing speed significantly because she's not trying to find the letters. And I'm guessing that people have a consistent pattern for when they're typing. And so you do have to pretend like you're typing on a QWERTY keyboard and that you are trying to type whatever it is that you're typing. You just don't actually have the letters there. But it's an interesting app. They've designed it with the hope that it would make typing a lot easier for those of us who either don't have an external keyboard or who just hate typing. I've got a number of clients that give me that, oh, even with Siri, I'm going to have to learn how to type. And I'm like, yeah, because she's going to make mistakes. And dictation is going to make mistakes. And after the fifth time trying to dictate the same sentence, you're just going to type it because you're so irritated that it didn't get it right again.
Well, not just that, but there are situations in which you don't want to be dictating in the first place.
Well, and you can't dictate your password, so you better at least know how to pass to type your password.
Darn right.
Yeah.
And you don't want to dictate your password even if you could.
No. I can just see that. Why can't I dictate my password? Well, for one thing, it probably would get it wrong because it would try and spell it the normal way. And a lot of people, you know, purposefully spell their passwords incorrectly so that they aren't easy to get.
Like, I know a guy that sets his password up as regular words, but he writes them in grade 2 Braille using grade 2 Braille symbols.
Nice.
So, yeah, I thought it was great.
I like it. You also can't dictate web addresses in Safari, and I've had the why can't I do that? And I same reason, because usually web addresses are not real words, and yeah, you're gonna, and you're gonna, going to get you're gonna them
end
wrong.
Up, and you're
going
to end up going to a porn site.
Yeah.
How would you know, buddy?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Sadly, it was probably not very interesting to Buddy.
It probably wasn't.
Yeah.
I don't know if he had his Braille display plugged in.
Moving right along. Our next application is one of my new favorites, and I'm actually glad this is on the list because it has made my hatred for Facebook slightly less.
I haven't tried it yet.
You haven't tried it yet? Come on, Buddy.
No, I hate Facebook.
How are we not friends on Facebook if you have Facebook? What's up with that?
Well, I have Facebook.
I don't think any of us are friends with each other. Wait, I'm Buddy's friend on Facebook.
I'm Pete's friend on Facebook.
I'm nobody's friend on Facebook.
So Pete is vicariously your friend on Facebook.
Oh, okay. Well, Peter, you can send me a friend request, or I can send you one.
Yeah, and just so we're clear, that wasn't an invitation for everyone that listens to this podcast to add me either, because lots of people tend to do that, and if I don't know you, it's not happening.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. You can search for me on Facebook, but if I don't know who you are, I'm not going to say yes.
Sorry. That's,
yeah, no so offense. Sally.
Except not.
So this new app is called Voicebook, and that is all one word. And essentially what it is they turn Facebook into Twitter. It's awesome. it's a one-flick swiping gesture to go from one part of your status newsfeed to the next.
And well, heck, that sounds even simple enough for me to understand.
That's right. And it's great. You can post your own status. You can reply to statuses with comments. You can like them without any frustration. It's better than reading my Facebook newsfeed on Flipboard because instead of a three-finger flick up or down, I get to do one. And I really like the one versus the three. And it gives you all of the details. Like, I remember the first day I used Voicebook and I did that was all part of the status update. I never saw any of that. Because I've been using the mobile site, and even the Facebook application on the iPhone doesn't give you that level of detail. I use Facebook a lot for following news organizations and things of that nature. And so I'd get the headline, but I wouldn't get any part of the news article itself. And I do with Voicebook. So I don't know how they make that magic happen.
I'm going to have to go get that.
I will wager one complaint. So if the developers of the app are listening and you can fix this, I'd really appreciate it. And that is that it is like my number one offender for me reading through and voiceover losing speech. I don't know if I'm reading it too fast. This is a bug that I realize has to do with operating system, and I don't even know if they can fix it. But it's very frustrating to be reading through whatever I'm doing, and suddenly voiceover stops talking. Yay! And then I wait, and I wait, and I wait. And sometimes it's as long as, I don't know, a minute. Do you guys have that problem? Am I special?
Insert.
Do you really want us to answer that?
It sometimes will disappear in certain instances with different applications, and sometimes it goes away for a second, and sometimes they're going, okay, where'd you go? And then she'll come back on and all will be right with the world. But I don't know. It's an interesting bug. And I don't think it's linked specifically to that application. I think it's an overall bug.
All right. So our last app that we're going to talk about, at least that we list in our show notes, and then I'm going to ask our lovely panel of hosts if they have any other favorites, is Blindside. So I think we might have touched on this a little bit last episode, but if we didn't, Blindside is a new application that is a zombie story, and it is 100% audio. You actually have to turn VoiceOver off in order to play the game. It is an audio adventure where the end of days have come, and your job is to navigate to different parts of the storyline as a blinded person. And I don't play very well, so I'm just going to go that it's a cool app, but I feel really incompetent, and I get eaten by the zombies a lot. Has anybody else played it?
I haven't yet.
Oh.
I've been playing
with
Blind.
I can't figure it out.
I've been playing with Blind Square.
Oh, good. Peter and I are not alone.
I've been playing with Blind Square a little bit, the new version of that actually has improved quite a bit, and now it actually does tell you your closest cross street.
See, guys, if you haven't found out by now, I don't hold anything back.
I wouldn't have ever guessed.
No.
So, since you mentioned Blind Square, buddy, please tell us about your experience, because honestly, I'm still on the I'm not paying that kind of money for what you're going to do.
It's an expensive app, no doubt. I don't know. Like I say, it's definitely improved since the first version. I don't know. You know, like I say, it's expensive.
Well, what do you use it for?
I just kind of walk around with it and...
Uh-huh.
Like I say, now it does tell you upcoming streets. I don't really use it a lot because, okay, like, I already know where I'm going in my neighborhood, right?
Right.
But, you know, it's another option. It's another thing that people can use maybe as the data for it gets better and so forth, because it uses Foursquare. And so maybe there's map data in Foursquare that may not be in other maps, like, you know, other free maps like what's that? OpenStreetMap or whatever.
Yeah.
It may be of use to some people. It's just another option, is all I'm saying.
So for those of you who aren't familiar with Blind Square is a GPS-ish application that does use Foursquare's information that has been compiled by all the Foursquare users.
But Foursquare doesn't have streets, so where's it getting that information from?
It must have a street.
Good question.
It must have a map inside of it, or it's accessing data. But the whole idea was that you'd be able to find out what's around you and be able to... Can you map a route to that location?
Nope.
No, but it kind of tells you sort of generally what direction something is.
When I used it, now this wasn't with the latest update. When I used it failed to release its use of the location API after I was done with it.
Oh.
So it would drain your battery in a hurry.
Oh, no.
And, yeah, basically I thought it was a piece of junk, and I was mad that I spent money on it.
Buddy, can you tell us how you would compare it to Look Around? Because that was my, like, biggest, how is this different, and why would I pay, like, double for Sendero's app?
To be fair, well, the Look Around thing, I don't know. I never got any points of interest out of Look Around. Every time I asked it said there's not enough map data.
Oh, interesting.
But Look Around didn't have hardly anything.
That's a function
for me,
of where Buddy lives, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, like, there's nothing here.
For me.
There's nothing here, but the other thing is... That,
I'm sorry, like, there is nothing near you. What are you talking about?
There is nothing here. But also, you have to actually query the Look Around app for the nearest cross street every time. It won't automatically read off anything.
Okay.
Now, Ariadne will.
Right.
If that's primarily what you're interested in, Ariadne is a great option for that. But it doesn't have any points of interest either.
Right. So, John, is there a favorite application that you have gotten recently, or maybe that we haven't talked about here on Triple Click Home, that you're excited about?
I wouldn't say it's an app that's got me curious. The developer contacted me privately, and I don't know if it's a he or a she who has appeared on some of the blind user lists and has stirred up some of the typical controversy that comes from that his type of or her type of app. And that's, I don't know if you guys have read anything about the Color Visor app. It's a color detector.
No. Yeah, I've seen which one?
This is called Color Visor.
And it's interesting. It's got an interesting, a different sort of slant on how it works. And it drives some people nuts because what happens.
I haven't tried it.
You hold the phone with the app running over whatever the item is you want to identify the color. And if you move your hand the slightest bit, the color seems to change that it's announced. So it might go like pale blue to, you know, some other blue just by moving your hand, you know, an inch to the left or the right.
Wow.
But its accuracy, as far as I've been told by sighted people, at least if you keep your hand steady, seems to be pretty impressive for a color app, at least of the like the five or six that I have wasted money on or have downloaded for free,
right.
You know, that are on my phone right now. But I mean, I'm not trying to promote the app or anything like that. It's just one that came across my desk, so to speak, in the last couple of weeks.
How much is that one? Do we know?
I thought it was 99 cents. If I'm wrong, it might be a little bit more, but I thought it was only 99 cents.
But yeah, I definitely saw the announcements for the new version 1.1 that came out, so I'm going to have to check that one out.
Okay. Peter, I know you're not the app man, but I'll ask anyway.
Nope.
Okay, that was easy. I do have a couple that I do want to highlight that I keep on forgetting about. The first one is Kayak. I am planning a trip to Hawaii this year.
Oh, lucky
and
you.
What? Without
I know.
Us?
No. Aren't you jealous?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I am. I've been there numerous times.
I've never been, so this is my first time ever. And I decided to get the Kayak app and have successfully looked and purchased plane tickets. And it was so easy. The voiceover compatibility is awesome. It took what I consider the really, really frustratingly long task of looking for flights out. Because the way that Kayak works is it kind of combines everything that is out there. And it shows you what's the best deal. I mean, they got thousands of options for every single time you look up a flight. So they're really getting almost everything. I will posit that they don't have Southwest, although Southwest doesn't go to Hawaii. So in that case, I didn't need to have them in my comparison list. So Kayak is a really great app. It's totally free and very voiceover compatible. The other one is Hotels.com, which also is very accessible and free. And it's a great way to find a hotel because they have special deals depending on how many days you're going to be there or how early you've actually booked. Again, it takes kind of the hassle of searching for a hotel out of the process because they've got access to so many things. And I was actually looking at getting a AAA membership as a way of saving myself money for hotels, and Hotels.com was offering me the same price. And so I said, well, I guess I don't need to buy a AAA membership if you're just going to charge me the same amount without having one. I don't know if that's always the case. Not going to dog on AAA. I think they're pretty great company. So those are just two applications that I've used in my travel planning, and I'm very pleased with their accessibility. And I kind of went out on a limb and chose them because I think Kayak was listed on Apple Viz, but Hotels.com was not. So I took a leap of faith that it might actually be accessible, and it was. Yay! Ooh. So those are my app suggestions for this month. So those are our app suggestions for this month. Coming up next, we have a very well-done interview with Jamie Pauls and Bill Frohlein. He is an iOS app developer, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about a couple of his apps, which include a Braille reference app and a Goalball app for all you Goalball fans.
If this interview is well done, does that mean it's not half-baked?
Well, I'm visiting today with Bill Frohlein, and Bill, welcome to the Serotalk Podcast Network. It's good to have you here.
Oh, absolutely. I'm excited to be here.
So you are working on some iOS apps specifically for blind people. First of all, what's the name of your company?
The name of my company is Northwest Mobile Development, and actually I just launched the company in January.
Okay, well, very good. Well, I was excited when you contacted me because the thing that you mentioned first, you got a couple things you're working on that we can talk about today, but you mentioned a Braille reference app, and I can see this being really handy for someone who's learning Braille, even like a sighted person maybe, or you know, someone who's going to teach Braille at some point. Why don't you go ahead and kind of explain what the app is and kind of go ahead and give me your thoughts on how it can be best utilized.
Yeah, and actually I have the app sitting in front of me. I have my iPad here. And onto the main menu, what it starts out with is a menu, and it breaks Braille down into several different pieces where you can try and find what you're looking for. Obviously, you have all alphabet Braille. That's everything, and this app is intended for everything for grade 1 and grade 2.
Okay.
So in that, you can get every symbol that's into the app. And then you can also do just alphabets, which is grade 1. You can do short form contractions. There's about 5 different categories that you can do. And when you click on that category, it has a pop-up that kind of comes up and it asks you how you want to search for it. And you can either search for it by the name. So, like, let's say if we're looking for the word about, you could just say go by name. And then you type in, just start typing in A, B, then you'll see about, above, you know, all the wonderful ones that have the words A, B in it. And then when you have that, it actually will, voiceover will actually speak on the screen that will actually say what it is. So it would say like letters, like for about, it'll say letters A, B. And the cool thing is then once you click on it, then you have the ability to actually see it, if you will, it's onto a detail screen. And then there, the other cool feature that we have here, you can actually choose to take that information and email it or text it. Now, which is kind of cool. And then the other part, when I was kind of saying that you can search by name, you can also search for it by ./contraction. So let's just say that you're looking for, you've got a contraction. Let's just say this is the ST sign. You could type in 3-4, and it'll tell you all the wonderful different variations that have the numbers 3 and 4 in it. It's a very versatile kind of situation here. And what I'm finding the most about this app, the utility that I see here is for people that are just starting to learn Braille. So they're trying to do their homework. They come across a sign. They're not really sure. They see .23. Well, what is that? It's, you know, it'd be a low B. Okay, now I'm not really sure what it is. So this way they have a very easy, searchable reference and an opportunity to integrate technology in with their learning style.
That's fascinating. You know, as you're talking, I have a friend who's taking a class. She is, in fact, becoming a teacher for the visually impaired, and she is learning Braille. And she's struggling with Nemeth code right now. And to be honest, it's been a while since I've used it, and so I couldn't help her a lot. I could see at some point if you even expanded into that and even Braille music.
Absolutely, and that's actually the plan. That's something that I'm working on that I hope to have out probably later on this fall, is to actually include Nemeth code and music Braille eventually.
That's great. Who's working with you on this project?
Actually, it's been myself, and I was also working with another visually impaired gentleman who is a longtime Braille user and whatnot. And I've, you know, utilized a couple of the other Braille users just to get all of my information. I've looked at a lot of different places, and obviously, if there's, you know, there's always the opportunity for errors. We always admit that. But if there is, you know, I just encourage users just to directly email me through the app, and that way I can actually get that, you know, taken care of. So
right. So when did you actually release the app?
I just released the app just a few weeks ago. I'm actually onto the second version. The first version didn't have the detail view with the email and texting in it. I found that to be a very important feature that I felt that was really necessary.
Okay.
Because,
that's
as you know, some people are looking for that one specific thing, and then they're going, well, for example, let's say that I'm the instructor and I'm sitting with my student, and the student's really struggling with one piece. I could actually pull this app out of my iPhone or iPad and actually email my student, okay, here's the thing, and I don't actually have to type in a single thing other than their date.
Right. Have you, well, I'm sure you've thought about, but are there any plans to actually port this over to the Android market as well?
I have not started building Androids yet, but it's something that I'm working on learning. All of my apps are eventually going to be Android. For right now, I'm focusing on iPhone, just
absolutely.
As I see that there's a lot of press on both sides.
Sure. Well, definitely, sometimes it does take those baby steps, but that's excellent that you're doing this. Now, I know that you're also working on some other projects, and there's one in particular that's especially dear to your heart. You want to share with us about Goalball?
Yeah, actually, I have a couple of different apps that I'm working on for Goalball. The first one is a collaboration piece that I did with John Mulhern, who's out of Pennsylvania. And what that app is, he, about 5 years ago, roughly, he launched a website called GoalBoardScoreboard.net. And that's an opportunity for, to have athlete schedules and scores and rankings. And they just introduced a point system this year, which is kind of like baseball. You know, in March, when we were at the tournament in Michigan, we were sitting down, and he's updating the scores on his iPhone, and I says, "Boy, John, wouldn't that be really nice to be able to have an app that would do that?" He's like, "Yeah, I'd love to. I don't know how." I'm like, "Well, I build apps." So that's when the partnership was born. So we just released this week GoalBoardScoreboard.net into an iPhone app. And this app, it's got almost real-time scores and downloads. So as we are at tournaments and the scores are happening, the games are happening, we're actually able to have it where you can actually click on a game and actually see what the score is as of that moment. As those things are happening, you have the ability to also have some, there's also some messages, so you could actually, some custom messages, like for example, you can actually email or text or tweet the actual score of a game. You can, and there's about six different messages for each, situation there that you can actually indicate. So, once again, very little typing involved because, as we know, most users, I know myself, I use VoiceOver a lot and not real fast at texting. So I found, if you have things that are already canned and people just select it from that menu, they're much more likely to utilize it. So it's a really neat thing. You can also see team web pages, you can see athlete rankings, you can see historical team finishes. So pretty much anything that you see on GoalBoardScoreboard.net, you can actually see in the app.
Sounds like you've got work and leisure covered so far in just a fairly short amount of time. That's very, very exciting.
Oh, one thing that I also have that I forgot was I also have the rule book in there. Let's just say that you have a rule that you're at a tournament, you're going, what's the rule on this? You can actually search, for example, the rule line out and actually get the official ruling of what that rule is. So you can actually go into the rule book, click on, let's just say search line out. You do a search, you see every, or you just type in line, so it could tell you what the court size is. It could tell you what a line out is. You click on it, and once again, you see a detail view, and you can actually see what the official rule is. And once again, you can email or text that.
What is the price of both the Braille app and the Goalball app?
The Braille app is 99 cents, and the Goalball app is priced at $1.99.
Right. I don't think anybody can quibble with that too much. You know, sometimes in the blind community, the niche market, I mean, apps maybe are a little bit higher, but it's certainly yours aren't. But, it's great to see the work that is being done. I mean, it's just amazing how much smartphones have leveled the playing field for us, especially in iOS, I think.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I get to thinking about with iOS that I think is really exciting is there's a lot of situations where people who have no vision are not able to have access to information as easily as someone who has vision. And I've found having, creating these opportunities, we're actually leveling that playing field. For example, a lot of times you're at a Goalball tournament and you're going, okay, who won whatever game that was? And, there's that visual board that, the people who have low vision or no vision, you got to ask someone, well, with this is actually trying to instill independence where you can actually find out the information on your own without having to ask someone. Or the wonderful, you can also do look at your phone and see the schedule. Oh, who's playing right now? Well, let me see. And then you don't actually have to go, hey, who's playing now?
Right. Well, you know, you haven't hardly even gotten these first two apps released, and I'm already pressing you for anything that may be coming down the road. Is there anything you can talk about right now, or are you kind of too much in the planning stages?
I've got another app that I've kind of begun, and I'm still trying to kind of thinking about. A couple of them are coming to mind, one of which is an actual app that, as we know, with all of our different devices, there is specific gestures for the iPhone and the Android. And no one really there's really no central point where you can actually find those gestures easily, or you got to dig really far on the internet. So I'm planning on actually putting together an app where you can actually click on the device and then click on the actual, what you're looking for, VoiceOver, or you're looking for the different thing, and then being able to find out what all the different commands are for each one of those. Also looking at another possibility of spin-off of that, looking at the possibility of JAWS, Window Eyes, screen, I would say more of the computer screen readers. How many times do you have it where you're like, okay, what's the command for this? So I'm really trying to look at, one of my niches is really moving towards the reference market, because I think that having that information at your fingertips is so important, especially as you're working on things and not having to go and search through a Braille manual to try and find something.
Sounds to me like trainers are going to really be happy with the products that you're working on there.
Absolutely. And those last two are kind of still in the concept phase, and you're not really exactly sure on how all that is going to kind of iron out. But I'm really excited about a lot of these opportunities and providing additional resources for folks that are visually impaired and blind, into the community. And I think that this is, a lot of these are going to be great resources that will help support their independence.
So where can a person go to learn more about your products? Do you have a website that kind of centralizes some of this information?
Absolutely. If you go on to www.nasinnancy, W as in West, mobile, E as in David, E as in Echo, V as in Victor.com, so it's nwmobiledev.com, you can click on the apps link, and then that will actually see all of the apps that I have going on. And I also have some tutorials that I have posted for folks that, and it's very much in the beginning stages, but for folks that are trying to learn some iPhone development. So I've got a couple of tutorials with source code that I can also look at if folks are wanting to get into developing iPhone apps.
Sounds like you've got some great resources there, Bill, and I certainly encourage our listeners to go to the website and check out what you have to offer, both the tutorials and the apps. I'd like to thank you for joining us today here on the Saratalk Podcast Network. It's been a pleasure visiting with you.
Oh, thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to coming back and seeing you again sometime.
Bill Froline with Northwest Mobile Development.
Triple click home.
That is really all that we have for you guys today. I want to say thank you for listening to this episode of Triple Click Home. My name is Lena Roberts, and you can follow me at twitter.com/blindperspective. That's BLINDPERSPECTIVE.
And I'm Buddy Brannon. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/BBrannon. That's BBRANNAN.
And I'm Peter Bosley, and I'm at twitter.com/PBosley. That's PBOSSLEY.
And I'm John Penneries, and I feel left out because I don't have Twitter. But you can visit my website though at www.macfortheblind.com, macfortheblind.com.
You know, there's a great Twitter client for the Mac called, I don't know how to pronounce that.
Yes,
Japanese swear word.
I also use Syring, which works pretty well too. So, John, you need to join Twitter.
I have held out. I have held out. I have resisted. I have done everything in my power not to join Twitter.
Alrighty, and we all cry a little tear for John.
We do.
Apparently, doesn't love us enough.
Well, and also, yeah, he's missing out on using Japanese swear word.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So, thank you all for being a part of our listening audience. We very much appreciate it, and we look forward to talking to you again in a month.